actually talked about it on You Betcha on the podcast.
He is an unrivaled source of baseball knowledge.
Anyway, what were we talking about?
A guy who always has your back.
Pants back on, try and make the uniform look sweet in a split second. Come out, and I'm trying to open the door. I'm like, what the? And I said, listen, buddy, put your babysitting shoes on because Dad's going out for Father's Day. You got to watch Top Gun.
Ryan Roland Smith, every week with Wyman and Bob.
That's the opener right there.
He's here, everybody. He's going to tell us everything's going to be all right. He's going to tell us why we shouldn't panic. It's all going to be just fine. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Ryan Roland Smith. Is that right? Did I portray your position accurately?
Sorry, I'm just on a plane to New York. I'm taking John Sterling's job, so see you later. I'm out of here.
Yeah, have fun with Susan Waldman. That won't be annoying at all. How do we make sense of what's going on with this Mariner team, Ryan? It's to call it disappointing is a bit of an understatement, as you might imagine, and I'm sure you know from social media fans are you know, reaching their limit of tolerance with what we're not seeing from this offense. It feels like defensively, for the most part, I know Castillo had the error yesterday, but for the most part, they've cleaned the defense up. Starting pitching has been giving them chances to win, yet the offense has just been dreadful.
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been a long first half of April, to put it mildly. And it's something when you look at what's happening, you watched that game yesterday, some of the chances, you know, you're talking first and second, none out, and all of a sudden, nothing doing a couple times yesterday, which could have completely changed, this homestand, to be honest with you, and how you feel about it and all the pressure and everything else. When you look at some of those things, and I'm watching this from, you know, being in a dugout with some rough offense, in my opinion, absolutely psychological. It really is. Watching some of the at-bats, it's something where this team, and you can hear the way Scott Service talks about it and what he's dealing with post-game, that these guys are coming up and there is just the world of this pressure on their shoulders to make something happen and make it happen quick and relinquish everything we've seen these first couple of weeks. And so when you look at that and you say, well, you know, look, everyone has to deal with that. They're at this high level, everything else. Yes, that is true. And I get all that. It's frustrating. But, man, I just can't see a situation that it is, you know, anything physical. It is completely psychological. I mean, you can look at things like, you know, fastball's 95-plus. They're last in baseball. Secondary pitches, they're in the bottom five in baseball. You know, things like that. And I feel like when you look at that, it's not an ability issue. It's a psychological issue going on right now with this team. And it's contagious. And especially, too, when you're looking at a guy, we talk about this all the time, Julio Rodriguez, J.P. Crawford, two of those spark plugs, first and second in the lineup, doing what they're doing. That's just a trickle-down effect throughout the entire offense.
That's got to be the hardest thing for Scott, I would think, Ryan. Just, you know, at what point do you go, okay, I got to make a change? I mean, you know, something drastic, it seems like, needs to be done, but then that's a departure from what your plan is going into the season, yeah. Right? So,
I
feel like that's got to be one of his tougher battles.
Oh, it is, and you've already seen, like, early. I mean, you go back to even the road trip in Toronto where all of a sudden he starts messing with the lineup. You had Ty France opening night, hitting eighth, and then all of a sudden he's hitting fourth, hitting cleanup. And so you know that there's that short leash when you're talking about adjusting, right, and trying to shake something up. And, you know, look, the downside of that, it disrupts, you know, the lineup and who you hit behind and you know, your approach and everything else. But on the flip side, he doesn't really have a choice because you just got to try and generate something. It's just lifeless, I feel like. There's just the energy factor is just so low, and you had that feeling. So even yesterday, I keep going back to yesterday because it's like it's this preempted feeling of, like, man, like it felt very difficult to push the issue when they were pushing the issue, if that makes sense. And I'm talking about when you had guys in scoring position, less than two out, and you want to make something happen. You just had that feeling, like, collectively. And I guarantee it's times 10 in the dugout where it's like, oh, man, we better put up a two-spot, three-spot, like, in the next 40 seconds, or it's just going to be more of this, what we've been seeing these first couple weeks in April. So, like I said, I keep going back to this. I know it sounds redundant because people just want to see results. But, man, I guarantee it's not a fun clubhouse right now. And so much of this, I feel like, even though there's so many new players, the the narrative coming out of 2023 was, okay, I need offense, bringing these guys in, clean up the swings and misses, and then it's just been a snowball, and that's lingering over from last year. And so it's really tough. And again, I will say this, pitching has been better, yes, but when you have a situation where your rotation is, you know, supposed to be the top five in baseball, and they struggled, that can be an issue too. Now, again, going back to this, it's April 15th, and if I say, yeah, it's early, people might swerve off the road, so I don't want to say it, or start honking their horns like I did last time I spoke to you guys. But, man, again, you just, as an individual, I'm not saying as a team member or as a teammate, from an individual, take a breath, man. I have gotten off to the absolute worst start, and I just spiraled out of control because I panicked. And then all of a sudden, May, June, July rolled around, and there I am sitting in the same thing I was sitting in April. So you got to, as an individual, take a breath and just focus on what you do. And when you walk into that clubhouse on a Monday afternoon after a tough weekend, especially yesterday, watching Julio get picked off late in the game, you just have to make eye contact with teammates, just drop a, hey, what's up, how you doing, crack a smile, all those little things. But as an individual, take care of what you're doing, and slowly but surely just start cranking out some wins.
How much do you, let me ask you this, because we ask the listeners this, you probably know, you see it on social media, there's a segment of the fan base that's, get rid of Scott, he doesn't know what he's doing, this team's playing horribly. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, again, the guy can't hit, pitch, or field for these guys. Right. You know, it's on these players. A lot of these guys have a resume. They are underperforming. So what is a realistic expectation for Scott? What is something you think he should do that maybe he has not done to this point?
Well, I'm not 100% sure if there's been that, you know, that team meeting, getting everyone together. I say this all the time. I say this, and I'll continue to say it. And it's a conversation you got to continually have, is you have to pull a Mitch Garver aside. Hey, what's up? Like, what's happening? Talk to me. Hey, I'm all good. You know, whatever. And just try and find some way to connect when guys are struggling. Right, and some way just to sort of look him in the eye. Because, again, I've said this 1,000 times, and Scott Servais has done an amazing job, because there's been some big ruts in his time here in Seattle, and there's been some overperformances for teams that didn't have high expectations. And he has tend to, with these groups he's had really good relationships and connections with these veteran players. We all know, if you're a manager, the last thing you want, especially when you start hearing it from the fan base, is to lose those veterans in a clubhouse. You do that, it's not going to be a good situation. And so I think for Scott, and I guarantee he does this, because again, like I said, in history shows with him, that you have to get them not on your side, but just connect with them in some way, shape, or form, especially before you do a group, a team meeting or a hitters meeting, and you might throw some generic stuff out there. Right? For example, right? Let's say you get together with a Mitch Haniger and a Garver, and talk to him and just kind of get a feel, or, you know, some sort of sense on what's going on with the team. What are your thoughts about it? You know, what do you see from this young group? And let them speak a little bit, right? Then all of a sudden you have a hitters meeting. If you go have a hitters meeting and you throw some stuff that may not jive with some of the veteran players, and then you're at batting practice around the cage and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, one comment's made or whatever, it can send just feeling, that vibe you do not want around the team. JP Crawford, same thing, man. Look, JP is one of these guys. He's a big team guy. He's a great teammate. You know, pull him aside. So, but I think individually, you just got to get a sense of what's kind of the feel, what's going on. Get them on your side, and which he does. And again, he's done that 1,000 times. But block out all the stuff about the you know, Scott Servais, this, that. Now, that's just finger pointing. No position player, if they're worth anything, it should be pointing, or any team or group of players should be pointing their fingers at anyone besides themselves. I've said that 1,000 times. You all know that. Sometimes I'm like, oh, this pitching coach made me work on this pitch. Oh, stupid. Oh, he's got me doing this, that. No, it's on you, man. You're the one letting go of the ball. And they know that. This group knows that. So it's a tough time. It really is. It's April 15th, and you just want to get some feeling of continuity in that lineup, some feeling of, like, we're going to absolutely dominate this starting pitcher, some feeling of, like, hey, this is a 6-7 pitch at bat. I'll just put you on the ropes. Now we're going to absolutely crush you by hitting this ball in the right center gap. Just that. You should do that 2 or 3 times, and you can start turning this thing around.
Should they? Should he shuffle the top of the lineup? We've seen him move guys up and down. You know, basically out everybody outside of the one and two spots. Everything else has been shuffled. Guy, you know, you talked about Ty starting at the bottom, and he's worked his way up to third. Mitch Haniger was hitting second when Julio was given the day off, so he's messed with it. But would you take JP out of that spot for a bit, bump Julio down to try to – I don't know who you put in those spots, but, I mean, should he try that? Or what do you think of shuffling the lineup?
Well, yeah, it works both ways. And, again, okay, it's something where you look at the – all right, let's say it leaves JP, for example, right? Now he's hitting sub 200. Now, JP has hit ninth in the lineup and thrived. I don't have the numbers in front of me because I'm walking around, pacing around with a phone in my hand. I'm actually a driveline right now with a bunch of Aussies. A bunch of Australian kids, yeah, hanging out. So I don't have the numbers in front of me right now, but he's thrived at the bottom of the lineup. It's not something where it's like, oh, we're going to punish you right here. Just give him a breather. And you express that to him. Say, JP, look, man, I know you're struggling a little bit right now. What do you feel like is going on? And hey, look, we're just going to have to slide you out of this top spot and make it to a point where it's like, we love you. It's okay. It's all good. It's not some punishment, you know, situation or where JP walks in the lineup, you know, takes his Gucci shades off or whatever he wears. I don't know. Maybe he wears Oakley's. Maybe he wears the $10 gas station ones like I do. Pulls them off and checks the lineup on the wall and then just drops his shoulders, gets frustrated, and he's upset. And it's something where you talk to him prior and say, look, hey, JP, look, man, we're just trying to give you a breather here, take you out of that spot for a sec, get some things ironed out, and we'll get you back up there. For sure. But one and two, nothing is sacred, that is for sure. Nothing's cemented. Yeah, shuffle it around just a little bit.
Well, and you mentioned earlier, you know, the last thing you want are the veterans, you know, to kind of get sideways. It just seems like I was describing to my to one of my kids, like, the Mariner, that group of guys, I feel like it's one of the top to bottom, like, best dudes ever. Like, I feel like they put together a really good group. So I just don't envision there ever being any kind of, because you got leadership, like with JP. You've got it with a younger guy, relatively younger, with Cal. And then you got Haniger and Garver that you mentioned. I mean, I just feel like the possibility that the notion that this team would fall apart because of, you know, egos and things like that, to me, is kind of a fantasy. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, for sure. And again, I'm not – and Dave, you know this. I mean, people speculate on personalities and character, but you know from being on an assortment of teams and groups of players and different circumstances with different outcomes, you really, really don't know until you're in there and you're on that bus with them. You're playing cards with them at the front of the plane. You're going out for dinner with your other hitters and stuff like that. And so I say that because I think they're okay. Like, yeah, from the surface, I'm just talking to them from a relationship standpoint with me. They're great dudes and everything else. The times get tough, man. Certain things off the field. Family situations or whatever it may be can factor in, and a certain guy can get angry or frustrated with a situation or you know where they're what's going on, something they can't handle with a lease of an apartment. I don't know. I'm just using random things that pop up, and they just change their whole perception and the change from being the guy who they were from a different team or from a year ago. You know, all that kind of stuff. So until you're really in there, it's really, really difficult to understand the clubhouse dynamic, except for looking at them from afar and how many high fives. Sometimes, look, no one watches the dugout more than me, man. No one watches how guys react when someone does something. Good classic example, Jared Kelnick last year. You know, when you'd spit the dummy, as we say in Australia, spit the pacifier out when you throw a tantrum or knock a water cooler down. I would straight away watch the teammates' reaction. Because it's my only take to see how are they reacting to that. I look into that dugout to see when something goes on, how they react and how they sort of interact, because that tells you a ton. But inside the clubhouse, it's just one of these ones where it's like, man, I tell people sometimes, hey, look, this teammate of mine, this is how it was. And you're like, really? I was like, yeah, that's just how it was. You just never quite see that on the surface, unfortunately. But until you're in there, you just don't know what guys are going through. But you, like I said, it's one of these ones you just hope that things click and these guys can start figuring out just little by little, just get one or two wins, stretched out in a row, and then go from there.
Spit the pacifier out. I like that. We've got a new phrase.
We call pacifiers dummies. So it's like, oh, he spat the dummy. Means he's trying to tantrum.
Spat the dummy.
Spat the dummy.
What's your take on the pitching we saw specifically in this series? I mean, Bryce Miller looked great again.
Yeah.
I thought Emerson Hancock, considering he's a guy that should be in AAA, he's in your five spot, so you just want him to give you a chance. He did that. I thought he did a nice job. And then Luis Castillo, to me, is yet to pitch like the ace. But this was his best performance. Six innings, three runs. So he gives you the quality start. I'm still looking for that next step from him. But what was your takeaway from the pitching you saw?
Well, I think, first of all, Bryce Miller has been pitching great. It's one of these ones. The biggest thing, I've spoke to you guys about this. This consistency is the question mark is just, and purely because he hasn't done it yet, can he keep this up through 150, 160 innings plus? You know, that's the biggest thing. Will they have to give him some breathers here, breaks here and there? And then Emerson Hancock, it just comes down to two things with him. Number one, that secondary pitch that can get more swings and misses, I think is going to be his biggest advancement. The changeup, if it's a situation where he can live and die on that changeup, he's good. I still see there's a little bit too much hard contact with that changeup when I'm watching him throw that pitch. It's filthy. It's really good. But there's just situations where I was like, man, they're just seeing that pitch a little too early, a little too easily, excuse me. And then Luis Castillo gave up that one home run on a changeup. I still feel like, man, he still has not gotten to that point where that changeup is just that dropping, missing a bat by 2 feet. I still don't see that. And again, I spoke to you guys about this. His last start before that in Toronto, getting the ball at the top of the strike zone, I feel like he was more aggressive. He was more on the attack, and he was throwing, there's a couple pitches. He was starting to get that velo up. But just that changeup, man, I just feel like he's just missing a beat with that changeup. It's just kind of hovering just a little bit too much. He just still hasn't got it. And I think that's the one thing with him. But I feel like he's close. He's really close to being dominant.
Hey, Ryan, this guy, Ellie De La Cruz, is really fascinating to me. You look at, he's a shortstop, 6'5", 200 pounds, very young. He's got four home runs. I mean, is he sort of must watch for you? Are you as fascinated by this guy as I am?
Absolutely. I'm excited. I'm going to the game tomorrow night. I'm bringing my Australian kids. By the way, when I keep saying that, I sound like I've got, like, this is all these kids from these, like, yeah, like random kids all over the place. They're not my kids. I'm talking about...
Yes, yes, we know. We know, right?
You've been mass producing behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at the text line saying, man, how many families does he have? No, I'm kidding. but we're going to the game tomorrow night, man. I can't wait to watch him. The Reds are a fun team to watch, and they're headlined by Ellie De La Cruz, man. They're just the size of him, and I'm taking these guys going to watch batting practice down on the field. And we're sticking around for Reds batting practice, that's for sure. Because again, he's one of these players. Look, baseball, Major League Baseball wants that younger demographic, and he's one of these guys that just captivates that younger demographic. These kids, all the kids, like, oh, De La Cruz, that's all they're talking about. So they can't wait to watch him play. So him and Julio, even though Julio's struggling, but he's one of these guys I can't wait to watch.
Yeah, he's must-watch. To me, Mookie Betts is my favorite player outside of any Mariner.
Dude, Bob, can you stop talking about Mookie Betts?
I love him.
Like every time
I love him.
I know you do. No, I like him too, but Dave, do something about this with him. Can you tell him to stop talking about Mookie Betts? That's all I hear about.
You should hear how much off the air he talks about him.
I got a framed picture of him. I hope to meet him one day. Ryan, let me get a quick thought from you on them calling up. We saw Canzone, who clearly had no idea where he was at on the field. The warning track did not warn him, and he ran face first into that wall. Made a great catch, but he's out. He's on the IL. They call it Class A. Any surprise to that move? Did you think they'd call somebody else or should have called somebody else up? He looked good in spring. I'm excited to see him, but what did you think of the move?
Well, I mean, it's one of these ones, why not, in regards to where the team's at. When you're talking about bringing up a young player and just to get the chance to see, him and Julio, left field and center field, will be special too. I'm excited to watch him play and just seeing from afar, I guess, in spring training. Again, it's something I'm curious. I'm going to ask tomorrow, like, hey, look, talk me through the decision in regards to calling him up. But at this point, it's one of these ones where it's like, okay, if he looks ready to go and there's no little, you know, fancy messing around with service time and everything else, bring him up. Why not? Get some of that youth energy up here and let's see what happens. But on the flip side, man, Dom Canzone, I saw that yesterday. Oh, man, he was slowly but surely starting to just put together better at-bats, showing that power to left field, crushing some balls to left field on the road trip as well. I was just like, oh, man, he could earn himself closer to the middle of the lineup and put together a good season. And really, I'm not going to say justify, but make that trade with Seawald look better here if he gets on a nice roll. I'm excited to see Class A, that's for sure.
Ryan, quickly, I had a standoff with my wife of 30 years at Home Depot yesterday. She wanted to buy like this huge horse trough thing, fill it with dirt, grow tomatoes and whatnot.
Nah, come on.
Yeah. She was determined and I eventually gave in. Is that how it goes in your marriage?
It does. Talk to me. Was it a cost issue? You didn't like the price?
Or it goes right to cost.
Was it taking up too much space, or what happened?
No, it wasn't so much cost, although the damn thing was like $150. But it was.
Oh, come on.
It was just like
I could have built one for you for $20.
Yeah.
I love that his first thought is, was it a cost issue?
Yeah.
Well, because Costco gets you. This is what they do. Now, I don't mind some. Oh, my kids say, mum's Costcoing, right?
Like, oh, they were at Home Depot.
Oh, Home Depot. I thought you said Costco for some reason. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, the other day, you walk in there just to get a packet of chips and a case of soda water, and all of a sudden you walk out with a slip and slide and a new barbecue cover or something. but look, it's one of these ones. Look, Dave, you're more of an outdoors guy than I am. We talked about this mowing the lawn, which, by the way, I mowed it diagonally, which doesn't make it look any better. I'm still terrible at it. Yeah. I tried to get all fancy with it.
Oh, you're trying.
Look, you know better than me when it comes to the outdoor stuff in regards to troughs to put tomatoes in there or whatever. But for me, it's just a straight no. It goes $100+. No, come on. Yeah. You better know what you better make some amazing tomatoes that I'm going to eat every day for that. Come
$100.
On,
and I'm skeptical that there's ever going to be any tomatoes. I don't think it's going to produce a damn one of them.
Exactly.
Oh, Ryan, you kill me. You kill me. By the way, our buddy Adam Ray is texting me. He's listening. He's on the road somewhere listening to us. And he said, tell Ryan his shoulders are looking strong in HD. He must be on the Bob Stelton jiu-jitsu workout plan, but he still sounds super Australian on TV.
Hey, listen, people don't, a lot of people may not know this. I know you guys have to go and get to a commercial to make some money, but a lot of people don't know. I took you to a Krav Maga session, Bob. Remember that?
Yeah,
I was like,
of course.
I was scared. I was like, oh, man, he's going to choke me out here. I was scared the whole time. But it was fun. It was good stuff. But no, I'm too scared to do the Bob Stelton Jiu-Jitsu program. I'm too old.
Still looking good, though, man. Still looking good. That's all that matters. Ryan, we appreciate you, man. Thanks so much. As always, have a great week. We'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ryan.
See you, buddy. There you go, Ryan.
He goes right
Smith.
To cost.
I love that. Was so perfect.
Yes.
Was it a cost issue?
Sounds like it is with you.
As soon as you said, $100, $150, he goes, oh, no. I could have built one for less than that. Ryan is the best. Our weekly conversation with Ryan Roland Smith is presented by Mazda of Everett. They got their money's worth today, by God. He's a gem. All right. The Mariners could soon be back to full strength. How about that? We'll talk about it coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks once again to Ryan Roland Smith, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you missed that conversation, it will be available on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com.
What was I growing in my backyard?
You were growing tomatoes.
Tomatoes. That was priceless. We knew exactly.
So good.
I mean, that was predictable. He was going to bring up the prize,
I
right?
I just love that was the first avenue when you said you had a stand-up. Oh, was it over cost?
Yeah.
It's perfect.
He's right, though. Like, you know, he said his wife goes into Costco and, you know, to get a couple of things.
Yeah, it comes come out with a slip and slide.
Yeah. Well, that's like Shannon will say that sometimes. Like, you know, I saved, like, it was this much money. I'm like, yeah, but we didn't really need it. Yeah. But yeah, a couple of times I go, man, you know what? With you shopping at Costco, I can retire early.
Yeah.
You're saving us money.
I suffer from the same affliction she has. I'm a Costco regular, and yeah, I'm getting to know people that work there now. That's how often I'm there.
You're known.
Oh yeah,
I
love Costco. That's my safe haven. Meanwhile, talking about the Mariners and their injuries they've been dealing with, specifically to pitchers with Brian Wu and Matt Brash. Justin Hollander talking on Friday. Giving a little update, outlines a timeline for Matt Brash.
Matt Brash, as you guys heard earlier this week, did throw a live. He's set to throw another live in the next day or two. If that goes well, then he would be probably ticketed to head to Tacoma for a rehab assignment when we go on the road. Would be the ideal timing. Again, we'll see how it goes. He felt good after the first one. He really got after it. I heard it was very good. So we'll see how this one goes in the next couple days, and then we'll plan from there. But I think it's, you know, if all goes well, safe to assume that he will be in Tacoma as we head out on the road trip.
Okay, so he's talking about the next road trip.
Yeah, after this Reds series. And the one thing I'll say, listen, you want Matt Brash the second he's ready to go, but I'd say right now there's not any urgency. The bullpen's done a nice job.
Yeah.
Problem has been their offense. The starters have been giving them a chance, as we've talked about. The bullpen, for the most part, since, you know, the blow up with Munoz, where he walked in the winning run that night, they've kind of turned things around and pulled it together in the bullpen. So, yeah, you certainly want the depth, and you want him when he's ready, but there's no need to push him. There's no urgency in that. That's, you know, if we're looking for a ray of sunshine here, bullpen's been pretty solid. So it's not a huge concern. Like, when's he going to get back? They desperately need him. They need him, but they're not struggling at this particular moment without him.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. And I just think he brings that dynamic. That pitch is just incredible. And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, I've been kind of down and sort of negative as far as like the injuries go. Like, oh, it's inevitable. If you have hard throwing pitchers, or you have a guy that can make a baseball do what Matt Brash does, you know, like, what did Stanek call it? Like, make believe, or out of this world, or whatever. Yeah. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be hurt all the time. I mean, some guys get hurt, some don't, you know, but it just seems like, you know, you're pushing up against that edge where it's like the human body can only take so much, and guys are trying to throw it harder and harder, which is kind of weird that you would actually willingly do something that is harming your body over and over and over again. But you know, you get paid for it, right?
You get paid a whole bunch, and it's all guaranteed, Dave.
For a pitch like that.
It's not the NFL here. You get hurt, and they kick you to the curb.
That's right.
You're getting every penny. Now, another guy that they're wanting to get back into the swing of things, obviously, is Brian Wu, and here's what Justin had to say about his injury update.
Brian Wu threw an up-down bullpen today. It went well. He will throw a live next, and then after the live, the next step would be a three-inning rehab assignment. A pretty similar timeline to Matt. Ideally, that would happen when we go on the road in Tacoma. So we'll see how it goes on the live setting. I believe the plan is something like roughly a 20-pitch up, down, and then another 20-pitch second inning for a live session, and then a three-inning rehab start after that, if that goes well.
Yeah, it's funny with Hancock. Like, I think he had one of the best opening innings for any pitcher I've ever seen come to the big leagues. It was like a minute and 45 seconds, 1-2-3.
Yeah.
There was a couple of grounders.
He should do that every time.
That would be nice. Why doesn't he?
I don't know. It's weird. These guys are stubborn.
But, no, that was against Cleveland. They end up winning that game 5-4. And he hasn't, like, blown you away or anything, but it's been good. I would say positive, you know, for the most part, especially if you look at it, the fact that he is, you know, he's a young guy. This is his fifth, sixth start coming up?
Yeah, I mean, you're in single digits in starts in his major league career. He's a guy you projected to be in AAA at this point. He's only here because it's an emergency. You know, they need him. And Service talked about how impressed he was with Hancock's most recent outing.
Oh, it's a big step forward. You got to keep in mind that tonight was, his fifth major league start. So he's learning. And, you know, you always want him to get him out of the ball game on a positive note. I was really glad he came back after the misplay at first base where he dropped the ball there. And I just, again, super impressed to come back. No fear, get in the strike zone, trust the stuff. That his changeup was outstanding tonight. I had a number of guys off balance. He made the mistake for the leadoff homer there. I forget what inning it was, about fourth inning on a breaking ball he left in. But other than that, it was really solid. Well-pitched game by him.
Yeah, sort of a welcome to Major League Baseball moment there.
Yeah.
You can throw a really, really good pitch, and they still hit it.
Yeah, they're still going to, well, do other damage. Teams do. Other teams do. That's the other frustrating part about watching the Mariners' offense right now is we talk about the mistakes their pitchers make. And, oh, Luis left that changeup over the heart of the plate, and the guy made him pay for it. And so-and-so, you know, Gilbert left the ball here, Kirby left it there, and they punished him. Mariners, you're watching them spit on pitches that are right down the heart of the plate, and then they're chasing, especially Julio, soft stuff low and away and just swinging out of his shoes after it. And you're like, man, I would love to see him just turn the fan on that fastball. You know you're getting one right down the pipe to open that AB. Ambush it. Jump on it. Get off the schneid here, man, because he is struggling so badly up there, and it feels like he's letting those meat, those money pitches go. He's looking at them, and then the ones he's chasing, he's deep in the count. He's already starting out down 0-2. He's not doing himself any favors, and I get that they want to control the zone and force the pitcher to throw as many pitches as they can, but these guys are struggling. I say you get your hits where you can find them, and if you see that first ball coming, that first pitch coming, and it's guys just throwing you a four-seam fastball right down the middle, don't take a look at it. Go after it.
I'm curious if they're having actually that direct conversation that you just mentioned, you know, and I don't know. Julio, I just feel like he's just too damn good to continue on this pace. Too good.
Yeah, I don't have any doubt he'll get back to being Julio. It's just the thing that's frustrating is he's the face, he's the star, and it's him and everybody else. It'd be different if it were just Julio struggling, but it does, you know, Ryan talked about it trickling down. JP at the top of the lineup is struggling. Julio is struggling. Basically, everybody is struggling except for, you know, Rojas has a nice average. He's not playing every day. Mitch is doing a pretty solid job. Ty France average is good, but he's not doing damage in terms of driving in a bunch of runs. He's hit into some double plays. You don't have many in that lineup you can cling to right now and go, well, this guy's crushing it. No, they're not, unfortunately. So, all right, coming up, big weekend for golf. Masters took place over the weekend, but does golf have a superstar problem right now? We'll get into that. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Why? What do we got going on here?
Why do we have Masters music?
Is this Masters music?
Yes.
Matt knows that.
Even I know that.
Matt knows how much this annoys me.
Dave really doesn't like it.
I really don't like the Masters music. It's a golf tournament. Play some rock and roll or something. Why is it, we have to have this sad music?
It's very serene with the azaleas and full bloom. Amen Corner.
That's always annoyed the fire out of me.
Speaking in hushed tones.
Hello, friends.
Yeah. You watched some of the Masters this week, and I watched a little bit of it here and there.
It's, you know what? Visually, I think it's just beautiful there, first of all.
Yeah.
Second of all, I've talked to people that have played that course, and especially, you know, for when they have the Masters, they obviously make it as difficult as they possibly can.
Yeah.
But they say that putting there is like to practice, go in your garage, like on a cement slab. Yeah. I mean, you see how you hit this great shot, but they put it on a hill, the tee or the flag in the cup, and it just rolls like 50 yards away. Just frustrating.
What these guys do is just beyond impressive, to say the very least. How they're, even guys that you look at and go, they had a bad round, they shot a 77 or 76. I'm like, I'd shoot that on the first three holes if I could find the ball. You know, right. I mean, it's amazing what they do. But, you know, Scottie Scheffler wins, second time in 3 years he wins. And I'm looking at that going, okay, outside of the golf hard course, they all know who he is. They know who all these guys are. How many people know who Scottie Scheffler is? Like, I feel like he could walk down just about any street in America and not be recognized.
Yeah.
He's pretty anonymous. He's won two. I mean, he's been, I think in the story I said, so he's been like the number one golfer for 80 weeks or something. This is not just he popped this weekend, you know, and again, he's won two of the last three. Yet I just long for the days when Tiger was dominant. That was just such a unique time for golf, and it brought in casuals. It brought in people that looked at golf as old people, you know, this is what old guys do, and that stodgy, old, you know, uptight, you know, rich guy thing that the old men do, and just put a new spin, brought a whole new, an entirely new generation of golfers to the sport, and the viewership completely changed, the demographic completely changed, a lot of younger people got into it, and I think they've feels like they've tried to anoint people to be his successor here and there, whether it's, you know, you can throw out any name you want. They're great golfers, whether you're talking about Brooks Koepka or you're talking about Rory or you're talking about any of these guys, but they just have failed to capture the casual fan in the way that Tiger did. And maybe it's too much to expect somebody just to come along and be the next Tiger. That's the reason he was so unique, because we hadn't seen anything like him before.
Yeah. Well, and then, by the way, I saw a little thing on, I think it was on Root after a game of Daphne's head covers. So the little tiger cover that he's always
puts on
had,
the driver.
Yeah, came from this company, and their company just blew up. They did a little story on them. But yeah, because of that. Now he has a shirt. I think he calls the head cover Frank.
Does he?
He did, because I thought of your dog.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's he's so, like you said, so iconic that. And the amateur player who played, he was the best amateur player. He got to play with Tiger.
Yeah. And he said he was great. He couldn't have been better to him the whole day. I guess he was really, really cool to this kid, and, you know, good for him. But Tiger's obviously not Tiger anymore in terms of being that guy. It used to be, I remember the lines were always like, do you take Tiger in this tournament or do you take the field?
Mm-hmm.
Which in golf, you're like, really? Is that really even a consideration? You're going to take the field. But back then, it was like, you kind of felt like he was going to win any tournament he played in.
Yeah.
And he was always in contention. He won, obviously, tons of tournaments outside of the majors that he won. But just, I don't know, does golf need another superstar? Do they need to find the next Tiger? Do you feel like, nah, they're you know, you capitalized on it when he was here, but you're fine without it?
Well, it's based on, I mean, these don't look like NFL fans or NBA fans or college basketball fans. They're a different group of people. But it was just packed there. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see the ratings or anything, but, you know. But, yeah, I think Scottie Scheffler is probably, you know, the guy I liked and was rooting for was Max Homa, mm-hmm. because I think it was his first major, and he said something about, I'm a dog. And I always root for the Americans, you know, like Colin Morikawa, you know, those kinds of guys. I always want them to win. But yeah, I don't think that you would recognize who Scottie Scheffler is if you were walking right past him.
No.
So, but it seems to be doing just fine. I mean, the purse there was a total of $20 million. So I don't know. Seems like, but I like watching it. I really do. And especially, and I think the best thing that's happened, I know that this was a disaster for hockey, but with the trail for the baseball.
Oh, to show you where the.
Show where it went.
Yeah.
That is a huge, huge win. Let me ask you a question. If you are at Augusta, you see those people that are lined up, like it's like a 10-yard wide path, and they're right by where the guy hits the driver. Are you going to stand there? There's no way I would stand there. I mean, I know these guys are good and that they're going to hit it down the middle, but if that goes just a little bit to the right, I couldn't.
Especially
I couldn't
peering your face in, because they all turn and like lean in see the guy, and then
I don't know what the miles per hour that ball is coming, but you're going to get hurt.
Yeah,
it's not going to end well.
No.
You get brained with one of those things. So, yeah, you're right.
I don't care how good they are. I would not be standing in that little aisle there.
It is amazing the amount of control they have and how consistently they're just right down the center of the fairway and just their ability to chip. And, I mean, it's, again, even the guy who looks like he's having the worst round of his life is crushing what any ordinary Mo is going to do out there. You know, it's just.
I always think the drive, you know, they say obviously that, you know, what is it? Drive for show and putt for dough.
Yeah.
You know, but watching the driver, you know, off the tee, and sometimes they'll put either a little fade or a little hook on it, depending on which way That's one of the more impressive things I've ever seen. That, like, you can actually control that. You're going to hit this thing like 380 yards, and somehow you're going to be able to just put the perfect draw so it goes in the right spot. But yeah, just that's amazing to me. I think you have to have played golf or at least tried to golf at one point to really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to realize it just.
Because they make it look so easy, man.
I know. I think that's what's frustrating. The balls hold, it's sitting still. It's not coming at you and moving. And, you know, it's not a knuckleball where it's dancing around like a butterfly. It's sitting still, and you're there to crush it. And yeah. It's hard. It's really hard to crush that ball and keep it straight. 206, I love you guys. However, you really shouldn't be talking about the Masters. I'm a huge fan of the NFL. I am. I'm also a huge golf fan. You don't get it. What don't we get?
What are we talking about?
I don't know. We shouldn't talk about the Masters.
Maybe it's the music. Why? And I entirely blame that on Matt. So
why shouldn't we be talking about it? What don't we get about the Masters? Are you telling me somebody's
my mistake?
Is somebody as popular as Tiger and I missed it? Is that was sort of the basis of this conversation? Do they need that superstar? This is not commentary on the skill level of Scottie Scheffler, who is quite obviously one of the great golfers in the game today. But
the reason we don't talk about golf all the time, you know why? Because people would fall asleep.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I guess we shouldn't be talking. We don't get it. I don't get it. All right, coming up, the draft just over a week away. We're going to get a good preview of what the Seahawks may do from Josh Edwards of CBS Sports. He's going to join us next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.